David Litt entered the White House in 2011 and left in 2016 as a special assistant to President Obama and senior presidential speechwriter. He tells us this morning, and will tell us this morning, about his new book, Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. Litt says the democracy you live in today is different, completely different from the democracy you were born into. You probably don't realize just how radically your republic has been altered during your lifetime. Yet more than any policy issue, political trend, or even Donald Trump himself, our redesigned system of government is responsible for the peril America faces today. Again, the name of the new book is Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. And it's a great pleasure to welcome David Litt back to the program. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's really nice to have you on the program. I know we had you on for your first book. It's great to have you on for this book. So what brought you to this particular point? I realize you've been writing this over the past several years, 3 years or so. What brought you to the subject?
This was my attempt to wrestle with a question that I kept seeing come up when I worked for President Obama, and then it came up even more when Donald Trump took office. And that is, on issue after issue, Americans want one thing and our government does the opposite. So on gun violence prevention, on climate change, more recently on how we respond to the COVID epidemic, the American people are on one side, and yet despite the fact that we live in a democracy, our government keeps not listening to us. And I think it doesn't matter what you care about. If you want to see change in this country, we have to figure out why that has started to happen, why we're seeing that disconnect between what the people want and what our leaders do, and then we have to fix it. So this book is my attempt to do that, but also in a way where someone like me would read it, because I can't get through books if they're too long or too depressing. So this is hopefully dealing with that question, but in a way that you'll actually enjoy and want to get through it, which
well,
is important to me.
I greatly enjoyed it, and I got through it. And it wasn't even it was not a challenge at all to get through it. It was greatly enjoyable. My question to you is how did you keep it from being just paralyzingly scary?
I think this is a really scary time. I mean, that's not a – I don't think many of your listeners are going to dispute me on that.
No arguments here.
Right. But I do think at the same time, what I tried to do was take the long view and say, ultimately, I mean, I am not a short-term optimist. If you ask me, is America going to look substantially better 2 months from now than it looks today? Unfortunately, I would tell you no. But I am a long-term optimist. And the reason for that is the words that first got me involved in politics were something President Obama said, faced with impossible odds, people who love this country can change it. That he called that the most American of ideals. And my view is, despite everything that is wrong with our country and despite all the ways our democracy has become less representative, that basic promise is still true. So really, to me, this is a guide to how to keep that promise alive for another generation, how to make sure that we can still change things together and solve problems as one country. And I think we can still do that. It's not going to be easy. But like I say in the book, I think it's easier than a lot of people think.
So why is there such a chasm between, as you say, what the people, we the people, want and what our elected leaders do?
The short answer is it's on purpose. This, I think, is one of the most important things to understand about American politics, is that one of the features of a political process is that the players write the rules. And Mitch McConnell, who is, in as much as this book has a protagonist, he's the protagonist, certainly not the hero.
Right.
He understood this better than anybody, and I think earlier than many, many, many other political figures. And if you look at the rule book of our democracy, from campaign finance and how we pay for campaigns, to who gets to vote, to how we draw our congressional districts, to the role of the judiciary, to how a bill becomes a law, every single one of these elements has been altered intentionally to make the system work better and give more power to a handful of people who already had a lot of power to begin with, but to take power away from the vast majority of Americans. So what we're seeing today is not an accident. It's not dysfunction. It's a government that is functioning exactly the way certain people want it to function.
You mentioned Mitch McConnell, and the news, of course, today is that yesterday he reached a significant milestone in filling the final vacancy on the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. That is one of his goals of remaking the federal judiciary. So, as he has vowed, leave no vacancy behind. That is a great example of what you were just talking about, right? I mean, that's his goal, but what does it do for us?
One of the most important things to understand right now in politics is that if you look at the Republican Party's platform, and I am a Democrat, but I think the facts just bear this out. If you look at the polling, the key planks of the Republican platform, whether that is not acting on gun violence or cutting taxes for the very wealthy, or even more recent issues like whether it's appropriate to wear a mask in public, these are all not popular among the American people. So Mitch McConnell's task is to figure out, how do I get unpopular policies passed into law in a democracy without having to face the voters? And one of his primary answers has been, let's do it through the bench. Let's get judges who are not accountable to voters on the bench, who are going to either pursue the policies that I want, or they're going to block the policies I don't want, no matter what happens in the future. And a lot of these judges, they're not just that he's appointed a lot of judges, they're much younger than judges have traditionally been through American history. So the goal here is to get judges on the bench who are going to be able to make law, make policy from the bench, not just for the next couple of years, but for the next couple of decades, as long as 30 or 40 years, well past the point where Americans will no longer agree with what those judges are doing. We are going to continue to have to deal with the fact that those judges are issuing rulings that steer the direction of the country.
So when you say the protagonist in your book, Mitch McConnell, that I mean, he had a laser-like focus. And by no stretch of the imagination am I saying that it was right, or am I saying that it was that it was easy, but he did it. And it was slow, it was methodical, and he got it done. And I just wonder how much else out there is underway. Because we look at the Trump administration, which seems, and I think I'm being polite here, it seems much more scattershot.
I think the Trump administration is scattershot, but in an interesting way, Trump and McConnell have developed, you know, it's like the end of Casablanca, right? This is like an unlikely and beautiful friendship that has developed, because Trump, I think, is out there in public. He's very good at getting attention. And Mitch McConnell is very good at moving behind the scenes. And Trump, I think, has delegated quite a bit of policymaking and priority setting to McConnell and to his party. Yeah. And so I think one of the things that Mitch McConnell has always thrived on is, you know, he's done a very good job of rewriting the rules while the rest of us were paying attention to something else. And I think one of the things that Mitch McConnell ultimately found he really likes about Trump is Trump's really good at getting us to focus on something else. And then behind the scenes, Mitch McConnell can keep doing his work. So the story you just mentioned with judges is one of the most important stories of our lifetime. But I highly doubt it's going to be the lead story today. And if Trump tweets something bizarre, that's going to be the story instead. And so in a weird way, the two of them actually, you know, they're a double act.
Mm. And so when you think about fixing, and it, as you said, it's not as hard as you think. So where do we begin in taking that on? And doesn't it rely on us to really get our act together before Election Day 2020?
The first step, obviously, is you need new leadership. That's a prerequisite. So no question, you need what I call a Skywalker window. Basically, you need to open up a small, you know, it's like the end of episode 4 of Star Wars. So, you know, a tiny little window, a gap in the Death Star, and it's not open for very long, but you make that shot and everything changes quickly. To open up that window, you need people in the House, the Senate, and the White House who all agree that the current trend in American life and American democracy is wrong and we have to fix it. And then what you can do is make really big change really quickly. And you don't have to say, let's do one thing and then the next thing and then the next thing. You can try to do all of it and see what sticks. And any of these changes will make a difference. You know, throughout the book, I tried to make sure no problem was addressed without at least some solution in there. And we could do a lot of this with a single federal law. You could have automatic voter registration. You could make Election Day a holiday, or you could move it to a Sunday so you had election weekend. You could get rid of voter purges, which are taking millions of eligible Americans off the rolls. You could end the legislative filibuster to make laws easier to pass. You could expand the courts to counterbalance all these judges that Mitch McConnell has forced on there by unfairly keeping seats open during the Obama years. You could do all of that in theory, literally on day one of a new administration. Now, it might take a few more days than that, but it doesn't have to be a 20 or 30 year process to repair the foundations of our democracy. In fact, that's not how it's going to work. If change happens, it's going to happen in a matter of months.
You addressed this, but I'm interested in your thoughts on just this idea of, because you address it in the book, that but I think it came as a surprise to a lot of us, myself included, of course, that of how easy it was to disrupt democracy, of how easy it was to screw up things that we thought were quote-unquote sacred.
I think the most important thing to understand about democracy is that it's a human construct. John Adams spoke about this very eloquently, and I don't have the quote in front of me, so I'm just going to paraphrase. He basically said that the benefits that can accrue to a society come from the structure of the government, and that it's our job, not just the founder's job, but all of our jobs, to think about how we structure our government, if you want the product to look right, you need the machinery to look right. And tinkering with that machinery is not just something we read about in history books. It's the most American thing we can do. Unfortunately, for the same reasons, it also means that people that are not particularly interested in representing all Americans or in moving the country forward for everybody, they also have a chance to tinker with the machinery of government. And if you look at which people have been doing the tinkering, which people have been focused on our country's structure over the last 30, 40 years, most of those people are exactly the people you wouldn't want to be thinking about these issues. They're taking the opposite view that John Adams did, and rather than trying to think about how we get the benefits to accrue to society in general, they're saying, how do we get the benefits to accrue to a smaller and smaller number of people? And they've been successful. But that is, I think, a sign that the majority of us, the rest of us, could be successful if we took on the same project.
But what does it say about us who have elected these people that have been doing this over the last 30 or 40 years? And what responsibility does that put on our shoulders, and what share of the blame should we take on that? These are our elected representatives. And if they're doing that and we're not holding them accountable, are we not accountable?
Well, I will just say these things work in a kind of snowball effect. Just to give you one clear example, Mitch McConnell would not have won his first Senate race in Kentucky in 1984 if it wasn't for a law that barred disproportionately non-white people from voting. It was a felony disenfranchisement law that turned mass incarceration into mass disenfranchisement, a direct legacy of Jim Crow. And without that law, Mitch McConnell wouldn't have won. And without Mitch McConnell winning, you wouldn't have seen more changes, and so on and so forth. So I think, not to completely take us off the hook, but there is this issue where unfair elections lead to politicians who appreciate unfairness, which leads to more unfairness. I will say, when I think about our responsibility, I think about it a lot as you can't just, if you were going and touring a house and thinking about how you would fix a house, you wouldn't just look at the stuff above ground level. You would have to take a look at the foundations. And it doesn't mean you would do one or the other. You'd have to do both. It's our job as Americans to do both. And I do think that we have not done a good enough job. And when I say we here, I mean the majority of Americans who want our democracy to work well. We've done a reasonable job of looking above the surface. And there's a lot of important stuff happening above the surface, but we also need to focus on the cracks in the foundation. And that, I hope, will be something that we're doing, not just in this election cycle, not just in the next 4 years, but beyond, to say that's part of our job as Americans. We have to know how our country works, and we have to be constantly thinking about how to make sure it works as well as possible.
We only have about a minute, so I'm going to ask a huge question, of course, in that last minute, and hopefully we can still get in time. But what does democracy think about the Electoral College?
Actually, that's a great question, because it's a big question with a really quick answer. Lots of things are complex. The Electoral College is not. It's a terrible idea. Let's get rid of it. I go into it in the book, but, we don't need to. It's dumb. Shelve it. It's time.
It's dumb. Yeah. Let's just get rid of it.
That's my NPR opinion. It's dumb.
I like it. David Litt's new book is just fascinating. It's really great stuff. It's Democracy in One Book or Less, How It Works, Why It Doesn't, and Why Fixing It is Easier Than You Think. It's published by Echo. David, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. I hope you'll join us again soon, and thank you very much, and best of luck.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Always a pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.